Thank you, Chris. And now I invite up Yuri Hereras-Yambanis, who's going to give us a perspective from a biofuel producer's point of view.
Thank you very much. Good morning. The first thing I would like to do is thanking ICAO for providing BioEca, a company specialized in bioenergy and new energy crops, in giving us the opportunity to present our point of view on sustainable raw material production for the aviation industry. As I have many slides, I will try to go very quick through what are the raw material requirements for this new aviation industry and what are the initially selected second generation feedstocks. Next, I will present how we see biojet fuel feedstock projects, especially analyzing sustainability issues and what could be the responses and solutions. And very briefly at the end, I will present the company objectives and technological capabilities as well as our current developments. So regarding along the biojet fuel value chain, there are some major milestones, mainly regarding the raw material, the technology processing, and the consumption. For the technology, there are several routes for the production of biojet fuel, which are currently being studied and developed. The good news is that up to date, there are tested and proven technology, especially when coming to hydroprocessing vegetable oil. When coming to consumption, prior to the use of these new biojet fuels, the aviation sector will require certification. Again, as Mr. Steele announced, the certification is planned too late at 2011. So the biggest problem from our point of view is that the assurance of raw materials in quantities and stable prices is going to be the biggest challenge for the development of this new industry. Here I would like to comment on how this new industry should learn on the experiences of other biofuel sectors. For instance, let's take the Spanish biodiesel case, where they didn't correctly secure the raw material and went and installed almost 3 million tons of biodiesel production capacity, which doubles the 5.75% European Commission objective for 2010. So as almost all the raw material was depending on soy and palm, when the prices of these two international commodities peaked, the result was that currently in Spain, 2010, at most 30% of the capacity is being employed. So we hope the aviation industry is not going to commit this same mistake. And that is why it is committed to exclusively use biofuels not affected by certain critical issues, including food supply, land, water, and of course, environmental issues. In this sense, the aviation industry will not use first-generation food feedstocks and is willing to develop and use second-generation feedstock that comply with certain characteristics, which are listed there below. The main ones are that, of course, crops must not interfere with the food sector, and must be produced in land not used by this for food production. It should require the lesser agricultural inputs and provide both carbon footprint reduction and equal or higher energy content than conventional jet fuel. Of course, it should not threaten biodiversity, and it should try to maximize the socio-economic value to the local communities. So, the aviation industry, as Mr. Steele presented, has selected four main feedstocks when coming to hydroprocessing technologies, which are jatropha, camelina, algae, and halophytes. Based on the current knowledge, experience, and ongoing development, these raw materials can be classified in two groups, in short-term viable feedstocks and what we foresee as medium, very interesting, long-term feedstocks. In the first category are camelina and jatropha. To go very quickly, just comment that although jatropha projects are very interesting and promising, their main characteristic is that they need, right now, manual harvest, which doesn't enable to deploy large-scale projects in the short term. Also, the yield is quite variable right now, and the meal is toxic, which is, I would say, the main difference with camelina. When addressing medium to long-term feedstock, the harvesting, processing, and infrastructure issues have to be solved before reaching commercial viability for algae. And finally, there is up-to-date limited experience in halophytes. So when we talk about biojet fuel feedstock projects, we think on projects that involve all the phases of the biofuels life cycle, upstream of the raw material consumption in the biojet fuel plant, which basically are the plantation, the crop mechanization, the crushing for the extraction of the oil, and of course all the associated storage and logistics. Now there are mainly two critical issues when addressing these projects, which are the term and the scale. If we look at the desired targets by the aviation industry for 2020, let's say a 10%, and if we go back to the Spanish case, this would mean we would need to produce and consume at least 500,000 tons per year. This is an achievable target, but still we have to put things in place in the very short near term. And the answer is that it will be necessary to implement large-scale agricultural projects to fulfill these targets. So in order to ensure this agricultural deployments, it will be crucial to guarantee the sustainability from all the perspectives. Indeed, there are several issues that have to be tackled in order to ensure this sustainability, mostly the economic profitability of the project, the environmental respect, and the social commitment. When looking at short-term, large-scale projects for raw material production, there are certain issues and sustainability issues which are listed above. But right now, we think that the most important are the byproduct use, the integral crop mechanization, and the agricultural inputs for the economic, social, and environmental point of view. So in order to guarantee this sustainability, we think there are four main solutions to be addressed. The first one is what type of crop is going to be used and how is going to be the plantation management. Also, what type and amount of agricultural inputs are going to be used. And finally, what are the production areas employed. When looking at this short-term viable raw materials, we're looking at non-food feedstock. You have listed there the most, from our point of view, the most important technical criteria, which should be crops robust, annual, and short-cycle, fully mechanized, and with current extensive crop know-how. Finally, they should use as the lowest agricultural inputs, which imply, at the end, lower setup investment in the farm and significant GHG emission reductions. As for the production areas, they, as we said, must not compete or interfere with land devoted to food production. So if we use crops, as defined before, robust, annual, and short cycle, there are mainly three different kinds of lands that can be used. The first one is marginal land, where robust crops with little water requirements and that can be adapted to harsh climate conditions can be grown in land where food is not viable. Land food crops are not viable, sorry. When looking at rotational or fallow land, if we use annual second generation crops, what we might do is increase next crop's productivity and prevent soil erosion. And finally, when using a second generation crop that is at the same time robust, annual, and short cycle, we can get into double cropping schemes, growing two crops in the same season, growing season, both preventing the soil erosion and maximizing the productivity of the land. As you will see on the right side, the crop yield and product quality in an agricultural project are mainly influenced by the nutrient composition and mobility of the soil and the pests and diseases. That is why a key issue related to the implementation of these new sustainable feedstock projects must be to minimize the inputs, mainly the chemical fertilizers and the pesticides. By reducing these inputs, it will bring two main beneficial effects to the project. The first one is a GHG emission reduction, and the second one is the reduction of the investment cost, both of them mainly related to nitrogen fertilizers. In order to achieve this goal, there may be two actions taking place. The first one is to implement biofertilization programs to reduce the chemical fertilizers, and the second one is to deploy systems for the efficient use of the inputs. This means putting into place efficient plantation management systems that minimize agricultural inputs, secure the production goals, and try to maximize the crop productivity. Lastly, I will try to present very briefly what are the company's objectives. Bioeca is a company specialized in the implementation of integral and sustainable projects aimed at supplying the industry, mainly the biodiesel and the biojet fuel industry, with competitive non-food feedstock raw materials. Although we have different activity lines, including Jatropha, Castor Urbino, or Carambe Abyssinica, right now we're focusing on developing a short-term second-generation project with Camelina, a non-food, non-invasive annual crop. As you will see in the table, this crop complies with most of the requirements talked before. There's only one thing that is not in that table, which I think it's crucial, is the fact that in December 2009, Camelina meal was approved by the American Food and Drug Administration as animal feedstock. This is the fact that enables that Camelina projects are profitable right now along the whole value chain, starting from the farmer and ending at the biojet fuel producer. So in order to ensure the viability and the success of these large-scale, short-term projects, Bioeca has incorporated partners and technology collaborators from very different industries. For instance, the genetic material, which is a key issue in these projects, as we have talked, comes from Great Plains, the Camelina company, which has extensive agronomic and genomic intellectual property, with exclusive access to the majority of the world's Camelina germplasms. And here, I think it's important to say that this is not the future. They are already producing in the United States almost 40,000 hectares of Camelina. Also, we have incorporated biotechnology, mainly through biofertilization programs developed with exclusive in-house technology. And finally, we've added a proprietary management system enabling the online handling, monitoring, and control of these large-scale plantations by neural computing. So, resuming, the company's technological capabilities are mainly the implementation of large-scale sustainable feedstock projects and their control management and optimization. This is a small bit about the companies I've just talked about. I think the great advantage is that Camelina company has this extensive germplasm bank, exclusive, that gives us the ability to produce new and improved varieties with the capability to adapt to different weather conditions and locations. That is why we currently have ongoing projects in Spain, but also in Brazil and China, and we're looking at some new projects in Argentina and hopefully the Eastern Europe. Finally, I would like to end presenting a new development we're doing in collaboration with the Spanish Civil Aviation Authorities. It's a Spanish program on biojet fuel development and qualification that contemplates the whole value chain, starting from the raw material and ending with some qualification trials. Thank you very much for your attention.